Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show... The big question has been answered. Joe Biden will be sworn in on January the 20th as the 46th President of the United States, and Kamala Harris will become the first woman and the first woman of color to serve as vice president. There are, however, many, many unanswered questions about the election, the current incumbent, and what it all means for, to borrow a phrase, Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Here with me to answer at least some of those questions, we're joined by senior Haaretz editor Chemi Shalev and by our incoming diplomatic correspondent, Judy Maltz. Welcome, guys. How are we today?
Tired.
Sleepless.
Anybody got any sleep over the last few days?
Very little.
Little cat naps here and there.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'd like to start by being the first to congratulate Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on being the last to congratulate Biden, apart from maybe Putin. What was he waiting for?
I frankly don't see a problem with the time that it took Netanyahu.
12 hours, right?
It doesn't matter. There is a special relationship between Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Donald Trump has not conceded. And I would think that Netanyahu was thinking twice and three times whether it is appropriate for him to congratulate Biden before Donald Trump has conceded. Mm. And in fact, I was surprised that he congratulated him at all, because I would have expected him to wait until Donald Trump concedes.
But that might not happen, right?
Then, you know, I mean, there is some reasonable time. I'm just saying that I don't share the outrage or the surprise that it took him so long. I think it's quite natural and expected. And also remember that everybody should remember that President Trump has 72 more days to be president. And we don't know exactly what Netanyahu is planning on those 72 days. And I'm assuming that he does not want to offend him, not only because he's been supposedly such a great friend of Israel, but also because he's still got 72 days left. I was a bit more surprised, say, by Ashkenazi and Gantz, who, I mean, I don't see any reason why they couldn't have been quicker. I don't think this is a major incident, and I don't think that Biden knows or cares about when exactly Netanyahu congratulated him.
Do you think he cares that the banner at the top of Bibi's Twitter bio is him and Trump in the Oval Office still?
I'm sure that Netanyahu will find an appropriate Biden picture on January 20th, which can replace the Trump picture.
But not a moment before.
No.
So we'll get back to what it means for Bibi to lose his BFF in a while. But since all politics is local, we have to ask, what does it mean for Israel? No more pro-settlement ambassador, for example. What's going to happen to Trump Heights?
I don't think anything happened to it since the sign was unveiled, so I don't think anything will now anymore.
Well, thinking back to when Obama was elected, there was almost a sense of dread in Israel, right? And it's different with Biden. Is that because he's less of an unknown quantity, or, and I'm going to be blunt here, is it because he's an old white man?
Let's hope that it's the former rather than the latter. First of all, you know, when Obama was elected, there was great excitement in Israel as well, from the very fact that the first black man had been elected president. And it took a while before people in Israel realized, or at least Netanyahu realized, that he was not going to get along with the prime minister. And it took a while before things started going downhill, at least a few months. Yes, everybody knows Biden. Biden has always been considered one of Israel's most stalwart friends in Congress. And under normal circumstances, I don't think anybody in Israel would or should have a problem with him. But we live in a polarized world, and we're after many years of demonization of the Democrats by Israelis. And Obama is considered toxic, and Biden is linked to Obama. So there is this concern. Look, it's very simple. For people who support settlements and who support Bibi and who have been right-wing and don't want a peace process with the Palestinians, this is a setback. But that does not mean that it's a setback for Israel. In my opinion, it's quite the contrary.
But for the settler,
lobby
undoubtedly,
and so
undoubtedly.
On. And Ambassador David Friedman is perhaps the most associated...
The symbol.
The symbol of Trump's pro-settlement policy. There's already speculation in some quarters as to who'll replace him. I've seen names like Dan Shapiro mentioned, among those whom Israel would be able to work with, despite differences, while someone like Susan Rice, whose name's also been mentioned, would be considered a more problematic appointment. What direction do we see Biden taking?
Where did you hear Susan Rice's name? I heard her name being mentioned as Secretary of State, not as Ambassador to Israel.
Also mentioned among a list of possible candidates.
I don't think she's a possible candidate. And I don't think it's that critical who the ambassador is, on the assumption that this will be an ambassador that is acceptable to Biden. He's not going to appoint Ilhan Omar to be the ambassadress, and I don't think that's an issue. I mean, we'll know the difference because suddenly we won't have a pro-settler ambassador, but otherwise I don't think it matters much.
And not in terms of the steps that Trump has already taken, moving the embassy, recognizing those are... signed, sealed, and delivered, right?
Everything is signed, sealed, and delivered, but for the Iran nuclear deal.
One thing I'm wondering if it's signed, sealed, and delivered is the sale of the U.S. ambassador's house in Herzliya Pituah, because that was supposed to be sold to Sheldon Adelson, and I'm wondering if that went through and what's going to happen with that.
That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Has Sheldon called it yet, by the way?
No, and also I'm sure Sheldon, unlike Bibi, is going to wait until Trump concedes. And also, I'm assuming that Sheldon wants a nice house by the beach in any case.
But has it been sold? Has the deal gone through?
I have no idea. Yeah. That's really the...
And I imagine that Friedman will actually stay in Israel. He has nothing to go back to. I mean, his main client as a bankruptcy lawyer was Donald Trump. Donald Trump, I don't think, has any money to pay him anymore. So what's he going to do now?
Before we look ahead to a Biden presidency, we still have to survive, Hemi, as you say, 70-odd days until Trump leaves or is escorted from the White House. Hemi, you wrote about Trump's West Wing meltdown this week. You said that if you didn't know he was the president of the United States, you'd swear Trump was either a tin pot dictator from some shithole country or was suffering from acute delusional paranoia. First of all, one doesn't necessarily negate the other. Is this a foretaste of what we can expect between now and January the 20th?
I don't know what we can expect. The whole thing with Trump is that one never knows what to expect. There were a lot of extraordinary moments this week. I think one of them was his speech, his appearance in the West Wing, where he didn't accept the results of the elections. He said the elections were stolen. And I was watching that, and I was watching the American broadcasters react to that. I think it was the low point of his presidency.
Mm. And possibly, conversely, the high point for the American media, which finally seemed to get the cojones to cut him off in prime time.
Yeah. Yes, true. That's a problematic issue for me, whether to cut him off in prime time or not, no matter what he's saying.
Mm. I mean, the temptation to fact check him in real time, though, must have been overwhelming. You can't help wondering whether Channel 13, Channel 12, Channel 20 here in Israel might start doing the same thing to Netanyahu.
They have, in a way. They've started. I think they did. One of them cut off Netanyahu a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one it was. It was 12 or 13. They cut him off.
You know, Trump's speech should not have been cut off because it was an extraordinary moment in American history. And I see no reason for the networks to have cut it off. What has changed is the tone. I mean, they were never very, very positive towards, but their tone, and from that moment, exactly from that moment, deteriorated seriously, and they started talking in terms that they didn't talk to him before.
Mm. So what will Jerusalem be looking for during the transition period and the first days and weeks of a Biden presidency?
Well, I think some of the issues are going to be how the new administration approaches the Palestinians. Are they going to reopen the consulate in Jerusalem that dealt with the Palestinians? Are they going to reopen the Palestinian representation in Washington, D.C., which was closed? Mm-hmm. Are they going to talk about renewing financial assistance to the Palestinians that was cut off? Are there going to be contacts renewed with the Palestinian leadership? So that's going to be, I don't think it's going to be one of their top priorities, but we will definitely be looking to see what is happening on that front.
Mm, and there have been intimations that that is the direction that that the Biden presidency would take, right?
Oh, yeah. A
Palestinian official was quoted today as saying that Biden is a Zionist and that he won't relocate the embassy back to Tel Aviv. So there is
He's called himself a Zionist. They don't need to say it. He has
absolutely.
Said that.
This is expectation management.
Yeah. No, right. He's not going to move the embassy back to Tel Aviv, for sure. I don't think he's going to announce that the Golan Heights is not sovereign Israeli territory anymore either. But he may overturn the decision that was taken by Pompeo, which stipulates that the settlements are not illegal.
Right.
Okay, because it has always been U.S. policy that they are. Mm. So he may go back to that.
Right. And even on a rhetorical level, they might start using the word occupied when referring to the West Bank again.
Right, right.
A former Saudi intelligence chief also had a bit of a warning for the Palestinians this morning. He said that the Palestinian brothers and friends will be disappointed if they think that Biden would be different from Trump in terms of their struggle. And that's pretty obvious, right? Everyone pretty much accepts that.
No. I think there's going to be a ton of difference between Biden and... First of all, their rhetorics are going to be completely different. And the rhetorics are important. And I think Israelis should brace themselves for a period of getting used to the new, you know, the changing reality. Even if Biden is not planning to do anything on Israel or the Middle East... just his very words about Palestinians are going to be so dramatically different from what Trump used to say that Israelis are going to be in for a shock. And they, you know, it's going to take them some time to get, even if he goes back to the kind of statements made by any, you can choose any past president you want from Ronald Reagan, George Bush, I don't care. Even if he goes back to just that, it'll be a shock for Israelis to get used to people talking about Palestinian rights and against settlements and against house demolitions. We haven't heard that kind of talk for 4 years. And what used to be considered normal will in the beginning be considered hostile to Israel. That's only natural.
Simon, I think one of the things we have to remember is that the evangelical community is not going to be dictating U.S. policy toward Israel anymore and toward the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Mm. And we'll see perhaps the signs of that on the ground or just in statements and the rhetoric?
Well, as Chami was saying before, and it's going to be a lot in statements, I don't know what we're going to see on the ground, but there may be calls once again for settlement freezes. That's something, for example, that the evangelical community was very, very opposed to. You know, they very much believe in the biblical heartland of Israel and Israel's right to the entire territory, the entire West Bank. Mm. So,
and also, look, there is, you know, Palestinians aside, the Iranian issue is going to come up very early because there is a outstanding problem of the Iranians on the one hand suffering from sanctions, on the other hand, as far as we know, pursuing their nuclear program. And the Europeans are very much interested in getting America back to the nuclear deal. And Biden is very much interested in patching up things with the Europeans. And we all know what Netanyahu thinks about the Iran nuclear deal. Mm. I think that's a crisis that will emerge very early in the administration, and especially if the Iranians are interested in getting back into some kind of nuclear deal.
And it seems that Netanyahu is already moving to head off that crisis, perhaps slightly. Reports today that he's meeting with Elliot Abrams, Trump's special representative for Iran, even before the dust has settled on the election. Also, quotes from Israel's former ambassador to the United Nations, Danny Danon, who said that Israel must now reconsider its approach to the Iranian threat in light of the new administration's intention to return to Obama's nuclear deal.
Yeah, I don't know what he means by that.
Well, yeah, is that a veiled threat?
I don't know. I'm saying again, it is in this context especially that Trump's 72 days are critical. I don't know what his plans are. I don't know what his mood is. I don't know, you know, what he's in for. He may want to still leave a mark on history that he hasn't yet.
Rather than
and
stain.
He could, you know, this could develop during the transition period. But it's obvious that and Biden has made no secret that he wants to get back into the deal, and that he not back into the deal. He wants a deal, and I think he has more chances of achieving it than Donald Trump. And this will obviously this needs to be managed, because otherwise it'll, you know, the two governments won't be on friendly terms yet. They won't get back into the groove yet, and this could prevent them from doing so. The Iranian issue.
Mm. What about the normalization deals that that Netanyahu has been and Trump, to be fair, have been touting? You know, we know that a large part of that transactional peace deal was based on the sale of F-35s. Will that go ahead under President Biden?
Yeah, he's actually welcomed those deals. What has already been agreed on will definitely go ahead. I don't know if we're going to see anything new coming up in the very near future, as we might have had Trump remained in power.
I think that the Biden administration is not happy with the sale of F-35s to the United Arab Emirates, and we know that they've said that they were going to take a hard look at it. And also, I think I agree with Judy. I think they're going to try to go through the motions, at least, of being of holding true to Trump's promise. But I don't know how enthusiastic they'll be. There's an issue of how much of these aircraft will be neutralized so that they don't pose a threat to Israel. That could, and definitely the Trump plan was to sort of swamp the Middle East with hundreds of F-35s for Saudi Arabia, for Qatar. I think that will be put on hold for the time being.
But there's no chance that the rolling back the normalization deal, or that if the UAE doesn't get its F-35s, it might have second thoughts.
You know, we don't know exactly what the sequence was of the deal. My impression is that without the F-35s, there may not have been a deal. So I don't know how to interpret what the significance will be if somehow the deal is shelved.
Mm. Okay, let's talk about how Trump's defeat could affect Netanyahu personally and politically. He made a big deal about his friendship, his almost kinship with Trump. But now Trump's tarnished as a loser. So how does Bibi make sure that the stench of defeat doesn't stick to him?
It will be interesting to see the next polls that are published, the political polls in Israel, to see whether or not this has any effect on the Likud. I don't know. What do you think, Chaim?
I don't know. They've already gone down, so it could be that they can't go down much further. Mm. I mean, it's obvious that this is not, you know, this. If there were two possibilities, this is not the one that Netanyahu would have preferred, and it's probably not the one that the Israelis would have preferred. And it does not reflect well on him, even, you know, in retrospect, as if he made a gamble that didn't pay off. What they're going to do now is they're going to say that, and they're already starting to say it, that Netanyahu is the more experienced person. He knows Biden. He's known him for a long time, and therefore he's the most appropriate prime minister to deal with Biden, which I'm sure will go over well with some parts of Israeli public opinion. But there's no doubt that from being Israel's number one asset in relations, he's become a liability. He personally personifies the ties to Trump, and he is personally maybe despised or disliked, let's say, by most of the Democratic contingent in Congress. And so, objectively speaking, he is an irritant to relations, and he'll have to try to hide that from Israelis and persuade them that he's the only man who can take care of Biden.
Mm. A fresh spin.
But we also have to remember that the person who right now is seen as his biggest competitor politically is also much further to the right of him, Naftali Bennett.
Right.
So this is even more devastating, I would think, for Naftali Bennett, or the agenda that he's trying to promote, which is the greater land of Israel. And he's very, very affiliated with the settler movement and with the whole call to apply Israeli sovereignty to the West Bank. So there's nothing that could be really be worse for him, in a way, than going back to the classic policy of the Democrats, two-state solution, according to the 67 borders and all that.
And I noticed with interest Bennett's Twitter feed this morning.
What was on it?
Well, he's tweeted out his thanks to Trump for everything that he's done for Israel, and we don't need to go through that list again, without congratulating Biden. And the truth is that he's been tweeting almost exclusively about the coronavirus in recent weeks and not about anything political. But it will be fascinating to see how he, as the leader of the second largest party in Israel, and who flanks Netanyahu to the right, how he's going to deal with a Biden presidency.
Well, the question, the thing that interests me right now the most is how will the Biden presidency affect public opinion? Will this be a boost for the protest movement?
The Iranian-backed protest movement, we should...
Yes. will Israelis... Israelis have become, perhaps they were, but they've certainly become more Trump-like over the past 4 years. And there's the reason that Israelis supported Trump in such massive numbers is not only because of his gestures towards Israel, but one has to say there are a lot of things in Trump that speak well to the Israeli mindset. Mm. And so I think there was genuine support for him. Now that we're watching, people watch the Americans on TV, they see the celebrations, they see the happiness, they see suddenly this whole new, everything that there was a victory speech that that Biden and Kamala Harris made overnight. And all of the things that they're saying are words and languages and concepts that we haven't heard for 4 years. Equality, diversity, multi-ethnics, and so on. I'm very interested to see whether this will affect Israeli public opinion in the sense that the number of people in Israel who support the kind of agenda that the Democratic Party has is dwindling and dwindling and dwindling, and it's a very small minority today. And I'm hoping that it will, at least now that that they have some big tree to hang on to, that perhaps the Israeli Social Democrat movement, say, or the peace movement will be able to recover from its doldrums.
Does Trump's defeat also mean that the defeat of Trumpism as a political strategy? I mean, can Netanyahu, for example, still use the prime minister's office as his bully pulpit like Trump used the presidency?
My instinct tells me that he's going to calm down a bit. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but I think now that Trump is getting out of the picture, he's going to change his rhetoric. But we'll see.
Even though
I think,
even
Trump
with the
enabled
trial
him.
Coming up, I mean, Trump is not only a lame duck; he's also post impeachment, and Netanyahu is very much heading into that particular maelstrom.
That's a good point, Simon. I mean, we'll just have to see how this whole thing plays out.
I don't know. You're right in the sense that we can't foretell how Bibi's rhetoric will change because he's got this trial, which is. But generally speaking, the Trump presidency was an anomaly for Israel, in the sense that Israel has always had a kind of babysitter in the White House. All of the presidents have wrapped it on the knuckles every once in a while when it did something untoward the Palestinians, or even in the case of Obama when Israel was, when Netanyahu, after the 2015 elections, his famous statement about the Arabs coming to the polls. And so, for the past 4 years, Israel has done whatever it wants to, and Netanyahu has spoken in any way he wants to, and he's passed any laws he wants to, and there's been no pushback from the White House. And that ends the moment that Biden gets into the White House. They are going to resume the traditional policy of the United States in a lot of aspects, including in the aspect that if Israel does something they don't like, they say so. And I think that will restrain the prime minister and it will restrain Israel generally.
And this time around, the president will have the backing of most of the mainstream Jewish organizations in the States,
right? That's a big difference now, yeah. What were the figures? 77 or 78% of American Jews, according to this J Street poll, voted for him. And
look, for American Jews, one has to say this is a godsend. This is redemption. I mean, they've been shut out of the power of the decision-making and of the power brokering apparatus in Washington because they're, one, because they've been replaced by the evangelicals, as Judy mentioned, and two, because Netanyahu does not get along with the pluralistic wings of American Judaism that also are opposed to his policies in the territories. And now they're back big time. You know, the evangelicals are out. Sheldon Adelson is not going to have the White House answering his phone calls. Instead, we get AIPAC back. And more importantly, J Street. I think J Street, this is its time. You know, this is its debutante's ball. It's been building. It was established 13 years ago. It was a sort of a minor player, but it's been building support. And it will be, I think it's perhaps exaggerated to say that J Street and AIPAC will be on an equal footing. But AIPAC will certainly have to decide how it's going to get along with J Street. And J Street is a powerful force inside the, especially inside the progressive wing of the Democratic Party.
Shall we wrap things up with anti-Semitism? We've already touched on it a little bit. Our colleague Alison Kaplan Summer wrote recently that Biden decided to run for president after the now infamous Charlottesville rally and Trump's very fine people on both sides comments. And now he's focusing relentlessly on fighting anti-Semitism. I don't know if you guys have seen the new Borat movie yet. There's a scene in which Borat orders a cake and asks the store owner to write "Jews will not replace us" on it, which she does unquestioningly. Biden's got a lot of work to do, right? Does he have a plan?
The Charlottesville statement that Trump made was, it angered the Jews, but it was a line in the sand concerning Trump's attitude towards white supremacists and so on. White supremacists are also, I mean, we have to mention this, they've also lost, they're going to lose their unique and first ever president who, you know, at least tolerates them, if that doesn't wink at them. And so, yes, Biden is going to have to deal with that in one way or another. Look, you mentioned the issue of anti-Semitism, and gets back to your previous question. The whole triangle of American Jews, Israel, and America is going to change again. Their status is completely different with Biden. Biden knows American Jews. He's been dealing with them for years on end, and they're not the same kind of Jews that Trump used to deal with in New York, which are more Friedman-like and real estate types. And so his concerns are much more in tune with the American Jewish concerns, and anti-Semitism and white supremacism is one of their major concerns. And so that'll be much higher in the, I mean, it wasn't anywhere on Trump's agenda, but fighting anti-Semitism is going to be very high on Biden's agenda, because fighting white supremacism is very high on his agenda. And I don't think that, and unlike Trump, Biden doesn't have an aversion to describing what the FBI says, that the greatest danger to America does not come from radical Islam or left-wing terrorism, but from white supremacist violence. So I think from that point of view, we'll also see a big difference.
Mm. Okay, well, we'll wrap it up there then. Many thanks to Chemi Shalev, to Judy Maltz, and to our producer, Aaron Ehrlich. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Haaretz Weekly. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.